So if people would please take a seat, we'll get started. So we're going to dispense with the roll call, and we're going to dispense with the first action item, so we hopefully have a quorum, and we're going to go right now to the progress reports, the committee reports, and I think Bruce is going to lead us through this. Bruce?
Sean's going to start. Okay.
Sorry. Sean, are you ready? Where is Sean? He's here a second ago.
He stepped up.
Paul, you want to have a seat in here?
Oh, I just said he was coming up.
So, Sean, are you ready? You're actually first. Okay, so we'll get started with Sean. People are wandering in here. We're going to... So...
Press the button on your mic.
Press the button on the mic and you're on.
Wow.
So, are you guys all familiar with this system? I think most people who have been here know that we have to be careful. You can only have so many people on at the queue at once. I think it's three or four, so four max. So we'll try to honor that. I'll recognize you if you raise your hand, and I'll just keep a list rather than worry about having a light on. Okay, Sean is going to talk to us about the regional economic development strategy.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I can be really short. Since our last meeting, we have continued to work on the project. The funding is complete. We're very appreciative of the funding that MTC has committed, and that has been overmatched now by private sector funding. We brought in some additional sponsors in the last month or so, so terrific shape from that standpoint. The Institute has brought on two new support staff to support this project, and they are hard at work on this now. The initial focus is on really just running the data and getting everybody the numbers to look at. Probably next week we'll be sending out an invitation to everybody in the JPC who's interested to be on the advisory committee for the project. And that is going to have one critical role initially, which is to look at the first set of numbers we have and help us interpret what they mean as we go ahead to the second phase, which is going to be more interviews with JPC members and business community leaders and leaders of other communities around the region. That'll produce a more complete semifinal draft, and we'll ask everybody on the advisory committee to review that with us. That will probably be in June. So, bottom line, work is underway, and look for an invitation sometime next week to serve on the advisory committee, and we will then look for an early date, probably the first week or so, or second week of April, to show you a draft.
Are there any questions for Sean? Sean, when do you think you'll have things to report back to this committee?
I guess when we actually sit down with everybody from the committee who wants to be on the advisory group and others who join that, I think that will be, in effect, a report of the content. Whatever comes out of that discussion that leads into the final phase of the project, I'll just bring that back to you for the entire committee.
Okay. So people who want it, they should contact you directly if they want to be on this committee.
Yeah, I'll be in touch with everybody directly, but if there's any questions or volunteers saying, I want to be on this committee, I want to see the product as you're developing it, just send me a note and that'll be done.
Okay. Thank you. Go to the Bruce's report about the near-term green jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to you all. Let me do two quick reports, first on the near-term Green Jobs Project and then on the Climate and Energy Resilience Project. On the first one, I'm going to focus this morning on the local renewable power section of this project. You can see from the check marks on the screen, we've made some pretty good progress in the last couple of months. We have formed the Bay Area Renewable Power Network, made up of over 40 stakeholders, public and private, in the region. There's a list in your packet of all of the folks in the network, cities, counties, industry, advocates, a whole series of players. We've brought them together from the nine counties and have mapped the key projects around local renewable power in the region. And we have now drafted, and it's in your packet, a short 2012 action plan for the region on local renewable power. And the action plan has three basic parts to it. First, we're selecting certain projects in the region that are going right now that really need to be replicated region-wide. They have the power, no great pun intended there, to do great things in the region, and we've selected certain projects in the action plan that we're going to push regionally for replication. Second, we are targeting a small set of barriers and opportunities for this year, such as permitting, finance, and a couple of others that we're targeting with our members to take on in an organized fashion. So that's the second part of the action plan. The third is to create an advocacy agenda for Sacramento for the things that we need done in Sacramento for the Bay Area to move ahead on local renewable power. So we have our draft plan out now for comment from the network. We will finalize that plan by mid-April. So that's on local renewable power. The second report will be on the Climate and Energy Resilience Project. So we are, as you can see on the screen, in progress with quite a bit of work that I'll show you a little detail on in just a minute on collecting and synthesizing the information on the various projects and various issues around climate adaptation in the region. And I'll show you some detail on that in a second. This is all leading towards a summary report that we will produce by June 1st. We will then hold briefings using a summary from that report with key leaders in the region from business, from government, from foundations, from universities in the region, from community-based organizations, key leaders in the region. Those briefings will be during June. And then we will have a public invite-only event around the report and the issues that are raised in the report on June 7th. This is all leading towards getting commitments by the end of June from about 20 or 25 key organizations in the region to serve on what will really be some sort of blue ribbon or green ribbon task force to provide overall guidance in the region on adapting to climate change and energy impacts. We will be asking some of them to help lead the effort. We will be asking others to provide resources for the effort. So each ask will be either serving, leading, or providing resources. And the idea here is to form a collaborative in the region of government and business, government and the foundations, government and universities, government and community-based organizations, together agreeing in June that these are significant issues that we must take on collaboratively in the region and to work together towards developing a regional plan and regional action on the climate and energy resilience issues. So that's where we're headed at the end of June. Let me just show you some detail that we're working on that's leading towards it. We've got agreement from the state to produce from the PEER program a 15-page report which will summarize all of the current research, and there's quite a bit of it, on climate impacts in our nine-county region. Right now, this is all spread out. There are probably 100 different reports. They come out at different times. Some people have seen some but not others. There's actually disagreement among some of the research on similar issues. So our state experts, led by Susie Mosier, one of the top climate impacts experts in the country, are putting together a 15-page summary report for us that will pull all of that information together just on what we're expected to find in the Bay Area and what we're finding already in terms of climate impacts. So that'll be ready sometime in mid-May. Secondly, we're working, and this is an example of the work we're doing on strategies, working with our network of advisors on what are the strategies for each of the impacts that we're going to see. So if you can see the impacts across the top, increased temperature, sea level rise and storm surge, extreme storms, and so on, freshwater shortages. And then each column is a set of potential strategies. We're not picking strategies at this point, but a list of potential strategies, and there are more. These were just examples here, dealing with infrastructure, dealing with habitat, dealing with public health, a whole set of things that are potential strategies to deal with each of these impacts in the region. And one of the things that we're going to do with that, if you can kind of see the bolding here, it's a little hard in the washed-out screen. The ones that are bolded here for this one are mostly about jobs and construction jobs. So this is crossing climate impacts and climate strategies was where can we put people to work in the region dealing with those impacts and those issues. So, for instance, here on this chart on jobs, building habitat corridor, water reuse and recycling plants, improving urban design, a whole set of things, urban heat island work. We're also doing one on a different sort on which ones would also reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So not just help us adapt to the impacts from climate change, but reduce GHGs and help the state in terms of implementing AB 32. So there are some strategies, again, you can see them here in bold, they kind of stand out, that would do both. And we're looking, again, for that cross between adaptation strategies and those that will actually reduce emissions. Here's another, and we can run a number of these for the report. Here's a cross between adaptation strategies in the region and things that will be important for the sustainable community strategy. Where we put the next 1 million people in the Bay Area will have a lot to do with climate impacts and vice versa. Preserving wetlands, habitat corridors, designs of our communities, where we focus new development, urban heat island again. So we can run different crosses on that kind of thing. Here's a third piece that I'll show you for now. We're mapping, because there's a fair amount of work going on already in the region, we're mapping for each sector who are the key stakeholders and who are the primary players moving forward here. So we can take for each of our impact areas here, temperature again, sea level rise and all, and drill down. We'll drill down on the water one here. And under water we have in the middle the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, which for the first time in the region is going to include a significant section on climate change for the water issues in the region. And you'll see across the top some of the key players, the Water Agencies Coalition, the Clean Water Agencies, the Stormwater Management Association, the Regional Water Quality Board, and across the bottom, a listing of some of the key water agencies themselves, the Ecosystems Climate Change Consortium, the Delta Stewardship Council. Anyway, a map of who are the key project players here and stakeholders, and we'll do this for each one of the target areas. So we can understand where we need to bridge between different groups and different projects that are working and where we need coordination. That will be our added value, and the regional effort is to add to work that's being done by water agencies and being done by others in the region. So if you drill down even further on each one of these in the real chart, you drill down, say, under the Regional Water Management Plan, and you can go straight to the web and find out more information. So we're developing a map like this for each one of the impact areas. Finally, we're talking with folks around the country for lessons learned on structure, on how they've structured their approaches regionally in metro areas around the country. This is one we're spending a fair amount of time on because Southeast Florida, our regional climate compact, covers four counties and more than 80 cities, I believe. So it's an interesting one to find. Most of the work that we're looking at around the country, it's one large city, New York or Chicago. King County's a little different, but Seattle dominating that. We have, as you know, a different setup here. And so finding Southeast Florida and doing a lot of back and forth now with them, some very interesting lessons learned as they've been at this for a couple of years, working together on sea level rise and other issues. And finally, along the same lines, we're trying to cross, again, where we can work on climate and where we can work on the economic crisis at the same time. And so here's an example that we've picked up from Chicago's region on green economic opportunities. Again, green infrastructure, other kinds of things we can put people to work, improving and preparing our region for the impacts from climate that are coming. So that's my report.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce. Is there any questions? Yeah, Mark?
Bruce, those three charts that you had about the Bay Area Strategy Report, the SES, greenhouse gas, and jobs, they're on the website. I can pull those down. Yeah,
they aren't at this point.
I'd like to get those, though, because it'd be worthwhile starting to see how you integrate all three of those together in your own mind. So is there some
yes,
way
we,
I can get
we could, I can make those available okay, to okay. you. We'll put a big draft on them. Okay. We don't want anyone to get concerned that we're picking strategies at this point.
No, I know, prioritizing. But I just wanted to get an early
Absolutely.
Read on it. Thanks.
And that's, again, part of the project is for an educational nature so we can get some of the information out.
Anything else for Bruce? Well, it looks complicated, Bruce. Put it mildly.
It's a big set of work.
What are the product we're going to see out of this? I mean, how are we going to translate this to greening the and you know seeing green improvements in our environment and also providing the jobs? How do we make that connection? What will we see about it?
Well, I think the first thing is our report that comes in June. The report's going to summarize the science, summarize the strategies, summarize what we see as options on structuring the effort going forward in this complicated region and the options on finance. As part of this section on strategy, which will be the second chapter, we will certainly do some of the work that I just kind of touched on here of crossing between where do we find strategies that will work for the Bay Area for climate impacts and where we can put people to work and build the economy. So that'll be a part of that second strategy, second chapter on strategies there.
Anyone else have a question? Yes, Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Bruce, are we looking at providing a menu of options for each jurisdiction?
We haven't gotten that far as to what form it's going to take, but there are really two categories. There are local strategies. There are things that can be done at a city or a county level. And need to be done at a city or county level. Then there are others that we would call networked assets and networked strategies, roads and communication systems and all that we share, and the Bay that we share, that have to be addressed collaboratively and regionally. So we will have at least those two categories of strategies. We're not close to implementation here on any of these. So we have time, not a lot of time, but we have time to do some real thinking about how we're going to bring together really local, regional, and state resources on this. It's not going to be simple, but I think the first task is our report to summarize what are the most important impacts and what are the potential strategies, and start to look at then how we're going to prioritize. That's part of what we want this collaborative to do, this public-private collaborative with foundations and universities and all involved. We have high-level meetings set up with Stanford and Berkeley in the next 3 weeks to get them involved on a leadership level and to get them involved on a resource level. We have a couple of major foundations that are now interested, one coming to town for 2 days in April to talk with us about providing funding and some strategic thinking for the effort. So right now we're marshaling the resources and focusing in on what are the key issues.
Yeah. Later on in the agenda, we'll be talking about the organization of the Joint Policy Committee, how you go about making decisions as to what you get engaged in. And I think Bruce has perhaps inadvertently displayed the challenge. There is so much going on in the Bay Area that it is hard, much less to be aware of it, just keep track of what is going on. And I think the challenge for the Joint Policy Committee is where you want to engage in all of these processes and where the JPC can be value added. So while you look at all of this, and we'll be keeping you apprised of all these things that are going on, I think later on in the agenda we'll be getting to how do you engage in these in what manner so that the JPC can play a meaningful, positive role and not just be kind of observing like everybody else.
If I could add one more thing. We're talking with San Diego and Los Angeles about how they're organizing in their areas around these issues. In Los Angeles, for example, they have formed a Los Angeles collaborative working on mitigation but a lot on adaptation and housed it at UCLA. It was a strategic decision to bring government and business and foundations and others together, but to house the staff for the collaborative on this at UCLA. In San Diego, it's the San Diego Foundation that is housed and led the effort, again, with all the players, government and business and foundations and their academic resources, but housed at San Diego Foundation. So we're looking at other models, those two and from around the country, as to how this could move forward.
Okay, thank you. If there are no more questions, I'd like to go back. I actually have a quorum, so we appreciate everybody being here. And the second item on our agenda is actually the approval of the minutes of January 20th. Could I entertain a motion? Is there any corrections? Moved by Mark. Seconded by Jim. Seconded by Jim. All in favor, say aye. Thank you. Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you. So now we're going to go to the progress report on the sustainable community strategy, and I guess Steve Heminger is going to start off.
Yeah, I'll start off on this one. Last night, the executive board approved for release the draft preferred scenario on the land use side, which we're calling Jobs Housing Connection. It contains our economic forecast for the region through 2040. The underlying assumption for that forecast is that the United States economy will reach what's called a full employment economy by 2018. That's a 6% unemployment rate. And if that were to occur, the Bay Area would be well positioned to get a sizable proportion of the jobs because the industries that are growing in our economy are aggregated here, which is a huge advantage for the Bay Area. So that looks like about 1.1 million jobs, new jobs by 2040. In order to maintain that job growth, though, we're going to have to build housing in order to support it and housing in the right locations. And that forecast is for 660,000 new units, 500,000 of which would be in PDAs. We think that's ambitious, and it's going to require a lot of policies to help support that type of growth in cities because the cost of producing units in those locations is much higher than what the Bay Area has experienced in the past with subdivisions in Greenfield. And the third forecast is for population growth, which is about slightly over 2 million. So with those forecasts in place, the draft scenario allocates where the regional growth will occur, city by city, and now we're going to be getting comment in from the local governments and the public as to more adjustments that will be made. This is a collaborative planning process with ABAG and local governments. We've had excellent participation from cities around the region and constant tweaking of the numbers and the PDAs. And we expect that we're going to continue to do more. For example, we know there's a glitch in our numbers for the unincorporated county areas, which is going to change the numbers throughout. But we understand where that glitch occurred, and so we'll be able to fix that in a few weeks. Attached to this as well is the regional housing needs allocation process, which is consistent with this scenario. So as the scenario changes, so does the RENA allocation. And that methodology was that preliminary methodology was also approved last night by the ABAG board, which puts 70% of the zoning for 2014 to 2022 in the PDAs. So the commitment is not just the plan, it's actually the cities agreeing to zone for this sustainable community strategy. Now, this land use plan provides about a 9% GHG emissions reduction in accordance with the 15% goal, so it's still 6 percentage points short. MTC is going to be providing transportation policy options in April to see how far we can close the gap. And then this preferred scenario in a combination of transportation and land use is scheduled for adoption on May 17th in a joint meeting of MTC and ABAG at a different venue because of the size. And hopefully at that point we will have a plan that will meet the target. So maybe Steve wants to comment a little on the April.
Yeah, as Ezra indicated, what the ABAG board released last night is the first step in a three-step process leading to May. The second step will come in April, where, as Ezra indicated, we hope to present some strategies that will close the gap between 9% and 15%. We'll also be presenting the transportation element of this Plan Bay Area, and that's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of projects. It's a lot of process. This year, as I think you're well aware, we established a series of performance measures to evaluate the project, and as a result, we're going to have a process in April where project sponsors for projects that have not the best performance characteristics, we're calling them low performers, not to be derogatory, but the fact is there are some projects that on a benefit-cost basis, when you look at the performance targets that the Commission and ABAG have established, just don't look as good as others. We're going to have a process where the sponsors can sort of make an appeal of those results and ask the board to consider including the projects for overriding reasons. And I expect that some of them may very well be included as a result. We'll also be presenting a series of middle performers, mid-range performers that look pretty good and that we'll be relying on, I think, generally the congestion management agencies to forward the projects that they think best meet local priorities. And then we will also be considering a funding strategy for the so-called high performers. We identified a number of projects. They happen to focus in areas like pricing of the system, better operation of the system, transit investments that are especially supportive of this land use strategy turned out in the performance evaluation to work quite well. And so we're trying to make sure that we take care if we do include projects that don't perform as well as others, we do so for a good reason, and that if we've identified investments that perform really well, we want to try to find a way to pay for them, which is not always the easiest thing to do. So all of that work will be presented in April, and together with this land use scenario will be available for public review, and then the challenge will be to try to knit the two together in May when we ask the boards at a joint meeting to forward it on, as well as some other options on, into the environmental review process. Under CEQA, we need to do a programmatic EIR of this whole thing, and that will eventually lead to a decision in the spring of 2013 on adopting Plan Bay Area.
I wanted to add one additional comment. We plan to make presentations to the BCDC and the Air District before this May meeting, so that's being scheduled now.
Are there any questions? Yes, Jane.
I just want to make a comment that I made last night, and I'm glad to hear MTC say they're looking at funding for high priority. But I want to remind everyone that when we started the PDA, we now have over 200 PDAs. And when we first started this conversation, we were talking about PDAs as being a real priority. This is a conversation we had last night. When you have 200, you're really not having priorities. The City of Oakland and San Jose and San Francisco, if you look at their numbers, are agreeing to huge amount of numbers for housing units. And we're happy to do that. But we can't do that without funding. So Oakland is in this 30 years is going to do almost 40,000 units. I think we have to have a funding connection to the building of those housing units. And I don't see that yet. I see a wish to do that, and thinking it might just happen, but I don't think it might just happen. I think we have to really figure it out. I would like to, you know, have you come back with a real plan so that, because what we're getting in the city of Oakland is tremendous pushback from our staff that do not take these RENA numbers. So, and it has to do with the funding to be able to do it in this era.
I think that's a huge problem, obviously, with redevelopment going away, and there's no substitute at the moment. So I'm wondering, you know, one of the functions of this committee is mostly to examine these plans and things. So the way we're scheduled, we would not hear this before the 17th of May, which is when there's going to be an evening meeting. Is that right, Steve? Yeah, an evening meeting. So it seems to me that if we really want to perform our function, we ought to think about how we get back together after it's come together, these plans, and actually have a discussion here, because if that's our function, that's what we ought to do. So I know it's hard, you know, but what I'd like to do is get the feeling from the group, but if the group feels like it, we should probably schedule a special meeting after, you know, have these briefings and we can have a chance to actually see everything come together, and then maybe we could make some recommendations to MTC and ABAG as they move forward. Suggestions, ideas, people, what do you think? Joe?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Jane. I mean, I think one of the roles that this board should play is that we look at that criteria, and if you have that many PDAs, it's not going to be effective. And so, you know, maybe a recommendation comes from this group that says you need to focus on this threshold, and we really maximize the investment the way it is right now. I don't think we're going to get an effective program that we can fund. And so, but I think Jane's comments are well-founded, and it's a discussion that should take place here.
Scott?
Well, I have no problem with the discussion. I have no problem. I mean, I've only seen this like 17 times. I just wonder how many times this document's been printed. We should probably start recycling it or put it on a flash drive or something. But one of the main concerns I've had about this from the very beginning is what I consider and what I've talked about is abandoning the suburbs. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'll wait. Okay, is abandoning the suburbs. And you know, I think it's great that Jane's here and, you know, she wants to stick up for Oakland. That's her job. And, no problem there. And she talks about San Jose also and San Francisco. But when you look at the little community of Dublin that is going to have 132% increase in housing units and 120% households, and you're looking at the housing units going up by over 20,000. You know, that says to me that as we move forward and we talk about the urban cores, which I do support the understanding of that, you can't abandon the suburbs, because ABAG is asking for a tremendous amount of growth out in, for example, the Tri-City area or the Tri-Valley area. So I think it's a great discussion. I think when you're looking at communities that are, you know, taking $20,000 or 20,000 in additional households, I think it's important that we recognize the fact that they're going to need PDAs too, and that not just be an urban-centric thing.
Okay, any other comments from members? So I don't. It's going to be hard for us to schedule a special meeting. It's almost, you know, looking at everybody's calendars. But why don't I do this? I was thinking that possibly the afternoon of Friday the 11th, which is kind of close, but. So maybe I'll send around some. Pardon me? May. I'm sorry when I say April. May. May 11th. In the afternoon? May 11th. There's a tentative date. I'll send it around if people. It doesn't work. Afternoon? I was thinking like at maybe 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, something like that. So like 2 to 4, something like that, 2 to 5. Excuse me? Talking about Friday, May 11th. Friday, May 11th from 2 to, say, 5, something like that, 2 to 4. Okay, that may not work for you, but we'll try, because I think it's important for us to have a chance to, and I think it would be good if the staff could actually frame some of the issues that they think are important for us to bring to our attention, so we won't just wander, okay? Okay,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Sean?
Could I know, Trav just reminded me that May 11th is the date of the California Economic Summit. So the event that you spoke at, the regional one we did earlier this week for the Bay Area, this is something where regions around the state, 13 regions, are coming together on around economic issues, maybe 500 people all in leadership capacities, hopefully elected officials, hopefully some in this room. So that's an all-day event on May 11th, just so you know.
It's going to be hard, but why don't we try for May 11th, and maybe you and I won't, you know, maybe you won't be able to be there here, but it's going to be almost impossible. But we'll try. We'll send around a poll and see what we can.
Why don't you pull the 4th, the 11th, and the 18th?
Okay. That'd be fine.
Mr. Chair?
Stay away from Memorial Day.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mark?
Yeah. Okay. This begs a question that's been on my mind. It has been asked at this group before. Why don't we set a month? Not that I'm suggesting we meet monthly, but we're going to have ebbs and flows where it would benefit us to meet on a quicker pace than we are. We've talked about this before. Might it be easier to set a default date each month, and we can opt for those dates? That way everybody knows there's a potential. I mean, just an idea.
Well, actually, we're going to have a lot of this discussion later in our agenda. So, but I think it's important. If we're going to do our job, we should comment on this for sure. So,
yeah.
So we're going to
– Sorry.
Excuse
Sorry.
Me?
I made a mistake.
The 18th of May is too late.
No, it's a day after the
day after
17th is done. Okay, that's Scott. You got to keep your eye on him. Okay, so we're going to try to find a good date. Okay, so we're really fortunate to have Paul Sato here. And some of you have heard Paul before present, but Paul is a futurist and somebody who's looked at these issues and has examined sort of large and small problems and change in particular. He's been involved with that. He's written quite extensively. He has a degree from Harvard, Cambridge, and Stanford. I don't know about that Stanford part, but the others seem pretty good. And he's a managing director of Foresight, a design analyst, I guess?
Analyst.
Yeah, discern analyst. So, Paul, we really appreciate your being here, and we're looking forward to your comments.
Sure. And, Tom, just so the idea of maybe if I make sort of 5 minutes of remarks, then we have a discussion, or
sure.
You want me to talk a little longer? So I'm here to talk a little bit about a different way of thinking about the Bay Area that's actually evolutionary on top of what you all have already done. But the bottom line is basically it's time for the Bay Area to think like a city-state, and it's time for our cities to start realigning. The background here is that in terms of the geopolitical landscape, the combination of globalization, the rise of cyberspace, technology, basically digital technology is the solvent leaching the glue out of traditional governmental structures globally. And what we're seeing globally is a shift away from the nation state to the city state. Being the new center of political, economic, social activity in the 21st century. So if the 20th century was defined by nation states, this century is increasingly being defined by city states, either actual de jure, legally recognized city states that have seats at the United Nations, like the Emirates or Singapore is a classic example, but also just de facto city states that by virtue of their economic and social power have become centers of gravity. China actually is more a collection of city-states than it is a unitary country because the most powerful politicians outside the Central Committee, in fact, the Central Committee is made in no small part of mayors. So against that backdrop, I think it's an important trend, and there's an opportunity for the Bay Area to leverage that shift in terms of evolving our identity. And city-states, by the way, matter because they're large enough to have a global impact, but they're small enough that everybody who lives there knows where they belong.
you know, go pick a random spot in the United States, find a guy in motorcycle leathers with an American flag on his back driving a Harley, and ask him if he's a red-blooded American, you'll say yes. But then the details are rather different if that motorcyclist is in the Castro district of San Francisco or downtown in somewhere in Alabama. In the United States, what we're discovering is that not just power is devolving, but our national identity is really devolving down to local stuff. And I think that's an opportunity for us. And I'll just point out a couple of things about why the Bay Area should think of itself as a city-state, because I think we already are a de facto city-state. Unlike Singapore, we're not an island. But like Singapore, we have a distinct geography. You know, we're defined by the Central Bay and the bordered mountains as the picture here implies, and you can't quite tell exactly where you're entering the Bay Area, but we all know when you're driving back home, there's that point where, ah, yes, I'm home, and it's somewhere beyond where your hometown starts. The second one is we have a distinct and outsized economy. You know, we think of GDP, then we have GSP at a state level. You know, California has, I think the last number I saw, a $2 trillion GSP, which is the largest in the United States, and it would make it the eighth largest country in the world. California is too large to be a coherent political entity. We've had that demonstrated. You know, we tried a superhero as governor, and that didn't quite work. And now we're trying Jerry Brown, and hopefully that'll work a little better. But the Bay Area has a $420 billion gross regional product, and that makes us the 25th largest economy in the world. We're larger than the economy of Taiwan. And if Taiwan can be a country, certainly the Bay Area can think of itself as a unitary city regional space. Also, the other thing that defines city-states is outsized business reputations. You know, say the name of a major urban area, and people's minds, it associates it with a particular kind of brand. Hong Kong is associated with trade. Singapore, corruption-free pragmatism. You know, Dubai, exuberant, freewheeling commerce. And the Bay Area, of course, our identity is entrepreneurial innovation, high technology, and the like. And our outsized business impact, think about what the Bay Area has done thanks to companies like Apple and Google and Genentech, that we really have had a global impact, even though we're much smaller than, say, Los Angeles. We have a distinct brand and high social cohesion. Silicon Valley, the greater Bay Area, really does have a forward-leaning quality to it that everybody in the Bay Area buys into one degree or another. So, you know, just as Singapore jokes about social engineering, we joke about Berkeley or the San Francisco supervisors, but we're also quick to defend where we live. Fifth quality, city-states are defined by an awkward relationship with their neighbors. Singapore has a little trouble with Malaysia, keeps trying to cut off their water or demand that the Singaporeans stop stealing sand. Believe it or not, Singapore actually has a strategic sand reserve set aside for when Singapore gets mad that they claim they're stealing islands in Malaysia. Well, we have Los Angeles. Need I say more? And sixth, city-states are defined by, when they work, cohesive, pragmatic governments. Look at Singapore as an example. And that's where it's interesting for us. You know, we have a start in that direction. The fact that you all have this council and we have things like ABAG and BART and the like is a start. But that's where we need to work more. And I'll come to some thoughts in a second there. But above all, just contrast this, think of this practically. Compare us to Los Angeles. So we have 9 counties, 88 cities, you know, some of which are truly HO scale cities. I live in San Mateo, the second smallest county in California, with some of the smallest cities in California. And I live in a town of 12,000 residents, which is charming but quite ridiculous. though I'm grateful for it, I was recently stopped for speeding, and luckily it was one of our police officers, and he gave me a nice note and then asked me a question about the town. And if I'd been in any other town, I so would have gotten that ticket. Compare it to Los Angeles, which has 4 million people and only 58 cities. So they have, you know, two-thirds the number of cities we have. And you can see the practical consequences. You know, even our one of the areas where the Bay Area has made real progress in terms of integration is in fire. But we still got a long ways to go. So Los Angeles County has a lot of fire departments, but it does have Los Angeles County Fire. And they are cohesive enough that Los Angeles County has 9 helicopters. And the Bay Area, I think there is only one helicopter that's owned by anyone other than the CDF anywhere near the Bay Area, and that would be the East Bay Parks, which is this cute little helicopter that looks like it came from the 1950s. Meanwhile, we got 3 major faults. Just doing something like reducing the number of fire departments in the Bay Area to, say, 3 fire departments could result in serious cost savings, but also a serious improvement of services. So let me just close with a thought here. I think the Bay Area is already a de facto city-state in many ways. It's already happening on business. We have a good start with some of your agencies, but, you know, you all haven't quite come together. It's in sort of the same way, Jupiter is a big planet, but actually Jupiter is a failed sun. It's not quite, it's not really a planet. If it was just a little bigger, it would be a sun. If it was a little smaller, it'd be a planet. You know, the Bay Area is not quite a city state. We have all the agencies, and y'all haven't quite come together. And then we have the issue of all the cities. We got to figure out a way to pull those pieces more tightly together. And I think the things I would think about is we need a new kind of local identity, a way to preserve the character of towns while at the same time creating less jurisdictions and more cohesion. You know, there are a lot of towns with some, well, you know, I think the San Francisco Board of Supervisors is great. We get enormous entertainment value out of them. It just want to keep them from voting on anything. So maybe we keep the soups around. And there are a couple of towns on the peninsula where I'd love to keep the city councils and just get rid of the decision making. But find a way to create the regional identity without completely losing the local identity. So there's a challenge here to create a new kind of regionalism and perhaps to create a new kind of governance. You know, California, the Bay Area has exported all sorts of ideas to the rest of the country. We gave the world, you know, Acid Rock, the Summer of Love. The states exported some really interesting ideas like Prop 13. It might be possible here to come up with a new kind of governance and a new approach to regionalism that we can spread to the rest of the country. But the bottom line, I would say, is time is short. This is something that has to be done quickly. I think Paul Romer in 2004 was the first one to say, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. The crisis that the various crises we're facing right now are enough to lower the antibodies to change that are normally around. People are desperate enough that they're talking about boundary drops. They're talking about disincorporation. We've opened several new chapters in the history of cities, chapter 11 among them. And I think this is the time to move very quickly while people are still in shock, while people are facing economic problems. And we can come out of it as something different and something much better and more effective. I'll stop and we can have a discussion.
Paul, I know that you're aware of actually 101 cities. I guess he'd already did some consolidation before you came here today.
Sorry, I apologize. Well, it depends on how you. Okay, I think that's an old BACEI number, and I forgot
that's
to ask.
That's before Devlin became a city, I guess, back in the early 80s. We have, what is it, I think 28 transit agencies around the Bay Area, 101 cities. I'm not sure how many different water agencies there are. And I think just in the city of San Jose, I think, what is it, down there, Osh, 19 different school districts inside your city limits, something, some wild number like that. And I'm one who's practically been involved in some consolidations, both in transportation as well as fire in my own city and county. But of those four areas, transit, cities, water, and education, in terms of collapsing, merging, consolidating, et cetera, which one of those areas do you think we would be best to start initially in terms of looking at something along those lines? I mean, unless you're proposing we do everything simultaneously, which frankly from a political standpoint would be nearly utterly impossible, I think.
Yeah, no. Well, this is where I don't know which place we start with. I think fire and emergency services feels like the place that is a logical place to start, just because it's a perfect combination of, you know, people have small wallets, they don't want to pay anything, and yet they're really worried about safety. So I would actually start with public safety. I'd be the election or education part, I think, really has to start locally. I mean, this is where the new kind of governance comes in. Does it really make sense it makes sense to have large fire departments? You know, firefighters, they live together in the same house, and all of their work is team-based. It probably makes less sense to have large police departments, because they tend to work alone or with one other person, and they're trained to be suspicious of each other. So it looks like scale in police departments doesn't work. You know, ask Sheriff Baca in Los Angeles. So I would start with emergency services, frankly.
So Paul, you know, it's almost, you know, we have all these jurisdictions, and we have all these people who are elected to these jurisdictions, and they don't want to give up. They don't want to give up what they got. And so isn't it more practical to think about trying to do some kind of functional integration rather than trying to set up a new governance?
Well, that's also, again, why fire works, because at least in our county, it was the retirement of fire chiefs that as chiefs started to line up to retirement, that's when you could combine fire departments and staffs. On the political front, I don't know how we do this. This is why I mentioned that the idea of a new kind of local identity. Is there a way to preserve the character of local areas without making them formal governments? There's been, you know, Greater Chicago area faced this about 50 years ago, where you have neighborhood associations and the like. I would start it's kind of a nutty idea, but I think this is how I would do it. I would start finding ways as cities disincorporate to preserve something like a council that's advisory rather than mandatory. I think if people feel comfortable that they have their local identity, you know, and they don't care if it's a town or not, that they will be much more open to something regional.
It's sort of interesting what you're saying. We've actually done that in our county and with our sheriff's department.
Coco?
Pardon me?
Which county?
San Mateo County.
Okay.
The sheriff now has Millbrae, San Carlos, and Half Moon Bay. And you raise an interesting point. They didn't want to lose their identity. So, you know, the cars still say Millbrae, but it has a sheriff's logo as well. So the hardest part I think you're going to find, it's like in our county, you obviously live in our county, we have 20 cities. Our population is the same as San Francisco, and you have some very, very small cities. You have some of 3,000, you know, and that type of thing. I think the thing we're going to start seeing is some of those smaller cities, Half Moon Bay ran into some serious financial problems. That's why they came on with the sheriff. A lot of them are having serious problems in that area, but over time, they're going to have difficulty staying alive, and perhaps it's either going to be shared services on a lot of fronts, or people will be willing to consolidate. And the same with our fire districts. It's been difficult. But at some point, the cities aren't going to be able to afford it. And I think slowly but surely we're seeing that. You know, that's on the public safety side. But when you talk about these other sides on transportation, school districts, I mean, you know, I worked on a project one time where the project had a school across the street, but they couldn't go to the school across the street. They had to go all the way around San Bruno Mountain because the school districts don't want to give up the kids. Well, that's absolutely asinine. So you got everybody driving around the mountain, the San Bruno Mountain, rather than going to school where they can walk across the street. I mean, at some point we have to stop being, you know, so myopic on how we look at things and so territorial. And that's a huge mind shift that we're going to have to look at. And that's just, that's the education area in some things. Transportation, same thing. We're working on trying to do sustainability, and I don't know if it's going to be merging as much as maybe shared costs or other things, but it's a real mind shift.
Well, mind shift's a really good point. I, at some level, we have to get the meme out there of the Bay Area as a region that really needs regional leadership. I mean, if you can get that idea loose in people's minds, in essence, create a new myth, then it gives you the cover to start having those kinds of conversations.
Let me just add one thing to that, though. You would think that would be something simple in our county, but you take Caltrain, and you've got little cities and big cities, and they all want something completely different, and you can't even get your arms around that, but they don't want to lose Caltrain. So, and they mistrust MTC, yet MTC was the one that saved Caltrain. So it's like, you know, it's really becoming more difficult instead of easier in some ways.
As a San Mateo County resident, you know, I'm reminded that there is one category beyond NIMBYs. You know, NIMBYs not in my backyard, and the category that's beyond that are bananas. Build absolutely nothing anywhere, and they're the ones with the garden signs against the high-speed rail.
Joe,
thank you, Tom. as you were speaking, I wasn't quite sure what the problem is that you're talking about. You know, as I look at many of the things that you're referring to, when you talk about fire departments, I see that as a soft target. And, you know, if you were talking about consolidating our transit agencies in the Bay Area, that's a very difficult target. But nobody, you know, we don't seem to want to take that on. So what we've done in this region, and it's unfortunate, but we don't get a lot of credit for the great things that we're doing. When we talk about functional integration, when you look at the leadership that MTC has provided with the Clipper card, you know, here we've said we can't get these transit operators together. So how do we develop this seamless system? And so MTC has aggressively and has spent millions of dollars, which the transit operators would have never done. And then when I look at a county like the one I represent, Solano County, to have six transit operators is just crazy. And so that is going to come from the legislature. It's not going to come from any regional body. The legislature needs to say these smaller rural counties, one transit operator, and consolidate them and get it together. Same thing with the fire districts. You know, I think what we're doing in this region, when you look at the accomplishments that we've made, and you know, I've been on MTC for probably too long, but you know, what I have seen in the period of time that I have, the milestones with transportation and land use, that what we have done in the last 20 years is remarkable. And as we go to Washington, D.C., we're just sitting in one of the meetings that MTC has used as the model as to some of the things that we're doing. And, you know, when you look at what we're doing with the SCS, with the Clipper, you know, the financial strategies that we put together in the nine Bay Area regions, many of the projects wouldn't happen without that type of coordination. And so there's just great things to build on. But a lot of the things you're talking about really is the legislative solution. You know, it's like any big city. You're going to have neighborhoods that have their unique characteristics that they want to preserve, and that's the way we ought to approach it, you know. And I don't know that we need seven cities in Solano County, but maybe we need those seven unique neighborhoods.
Oh, I agree with that.
And so, you know, our pressure needs to be put on the legislature to, you know, from my perspective, when I look at the air district, I look at MTC, I look at the eight bodies that I serve on with local elected officials, they are the most responsive people. And they're really dealing with some very tough issues that money, if we had money, we probably could solve most of them. And so I just don't see the problem as bad as everybody else does. I just think that there needs to be some leadership at the legislative level with recommendations that are coming out of the region. I mean, and I think the MTC has brought forth some great strategy. We'd never get the legislature. I mean, the years that we've dealt with congestion pricing, I mean, it's taken us 20-something years to get that adopted.
Well, all I'd say is we couldn't even have had this kind of conversation but for, you know, the tremendous work that's been done. I mean, the examples you cite, the fact that the region has made progress on these issues puts us to a place now where we can actually move it to the next step. If we hadn't done that, we wouldn't have that. I would just say the next step is getting people to think about the possibility of the Bay Area as a cohesive unit is a way to accelerate the conversations we already have to put pressures on legislatures. By the way, one thing about city-states is part of their power is determined by the hinterlands they control. And our hinterlands would be Sacramento. So I'm not saying a hostile takeover of Sacramento, but you know, paying attention to everything between here and there is also part of it.
Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Short of Sacramento dictating and legislators from San Bernardino County and the Inland Empire telling the Bay Area how they should run their business, why not? And I'm just throwing this out there. It's off the top of my head. You know, if you look around, all the chairs in this room that are in this room could fit one representative from every city and county in the Bay Area. Maybe we ought to consider a one-time or a very limited term of a, I wouldn't call it a constitutional convention or a harmonic convergence if you go the other direction. But what if we had a representative from each jurisdiction for a short term, for a couple of meetings, to decide what is the JPC presenting, what menus are being offered, what type of governance can we accept on a regional basis? If it's not going to be legislated from San Francisco, it's got to be all voluntary. And everybody's going to say, well, I want a piece of that. So maybe we have some type of, and we could put it together rather quickly, a convening of Bay Area cities and governments. And believe it or not, they'd all fit in this room with all the chairs we have here. It's not overwhelming. So just a thought.
Not called a bag? I don't know.
I thought about ABAG. I'm not trying to diminish the role of ABAG, but this would be an all-encompassing agenda, which the JPC could then funnel something to. I mean, whatever we come up to, this is what JPC could actually present its ideas and menus for governance and attaining SCS and all these other goals we have. That's what I'm thinking.
Mark?
I just want to get back specifically, Paul, to you. I've heard you say this before about the three fire districts in the Bay Area, and I just, from a geographic standpoint, I don't know if you've given that, you must have given some thought to this. I'm assuming you're thinking of one district would be the city of San Francisco down to somewhere in Santa Clara County. District 2, we'll call it, would be somewhere in Santa Clara County up to Crockett, and then the four northern counties as a third district. Is that sort of what you're envisioning, or...?
There we go. Making sure that the fire departments don't have to cross too many bridges. It feels like it's, or think of it, one fire department for each fault system, San Andreas, Hayward, and Rogers Creek. Just kidding. I want to make sure I answered your question.
Basically, as I described it, would be what you would.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, hey, Ezra, I have a question for you. You mentioned, I thought your comment earlier in the last session about South Florida, where you have one powerful city, pretty much aligns things. And that's, I think that was you?
Bruce.
Sorry, Bruce. Sorry, I couldn't see you. It was coming from that direction. So Bruce, you know, I think of that in terms of Chicago, where they muscled a bunch of suburbs in. And maybe the good news, bad news is that we don't have one dominant city in the Bay Area. And so if you were thinking about it, organizing it without a single dominant city, what do you think the opportunities are?
How long do we have?
Well, another 15 minutes.
I would just point out that for Southeast Florida, what started them on working together as four counties on climate change and sea level rise was that each county had come up with different science and was out presenting the threat from sea level rise with different numbers and different dates in the future. That was the very first thing that brought them together, was someone from their congressional delegation told them, get one set of scientific facts and start with that. Once they started working together, and that was on research, they found that in talking, there were other things that would be beneficial to do as four counties as opposed to each county on their own. And then they've brought in the cities.
Travis, do you want to make a comment?
Just an editorial comment. The folks in Southwest Florida have invited me to come down there and talk to them because they are so impressed with what we're doing here in the Bay Area.
Don't go. Sean?
The Institute has nothing if not numbers, so we've got some new numbers for you, Paul. Our economic report for 2012 comes out on Sunday, so the GDP for the region is now $535 billion, which would make us the 19th largest economy in the world. So that's an economy that has impact, as you said, around the world. But as part of that, and this did come up in a previous JPC meeting when I mentioned that we have a focus on regional governance, not government, but governance in this study. And we've come up with a number that shared services alone could save regional governments between $300 and $600 million annually. So that's not based on looking city by city, county by county, project by project, but sort of at a macro level, that's the scale of the opportunity, at least from a fiscal standpoint.
So thank you, Paul, for this discussion. I wanted to just quickly go to item number 7, which is my update on Senate Bill 878, because it's relevant to this discussion. I talked to the Senator DeSalle, and he indicated, pardon me, that he has no plans to move 878. 878 is not going to go forward. However, he is going to be doing something around governance in the Bay Area, and it'll be coming out relatively soon. You know, he's this guy's got a fertile mind and lots of time on his hands, I guess. So there'll be something coming out soon. So this discussion actually will have some relevance because at some point he's going to have something out there that we can look at, talk about, and potentially support or oppose, whatever we or amend, ask for amendments. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. So we're now, unless there's any more discussion on this particular topic, I'd like to go to our review.
Tom, there is.
Joe.
The senator, you know, I'm not quite sure what the problem is he's trying to solve. And I think that we honestly ought to ask that question. I'm kind of getting sick and tired of you know, going after these regional agencies, and for what purpose? What is the problem he's trying to solve? And I think that that is a legitimate question, and we don't ask that question. And I think that we have a responsibility to do it because you want to start moving all the chairs on the deck while the ship sinking is one thing. But I don't know where he's going with this, and I don't see any improvement in addressing the real serious problems that we have. And it's like I had mentioned earlier about consolidation of the transit operations. I mean, that's a huge problem. And the sustainability project is really pointing out some of the problems that we're faced with. Why aren't we talking about those very important issues? Why is it we're talking about, you know, all the chairs, and it just doesn't make sense. And so I think there needs to be some accountability as to what the hell is the problem we're trying to solve.
Yeah, well, he doesn't take his lessons from me, you know. But I think that's an important question to raise with him. I think it's absolutely the right question. So I don't even know what he's doing. He told me I saw him at an Alameda County Mayor's Conference on Wednesday, and he indicated that he was not going to proceed with 878, which makes a lot of sense. Because I told him, how the heck are you going to pay for this? You know, you're asking us to do all this stuff. How are you going to pay for it, right? So he basically indicated to me he wasn't going to move that bill, or at least in that form, right? So that bill, I think, is done. But then he indicated that he was planning to do some other legislation, and he was very vague about it, so I don't really know what he has in mind.
I might suggest maybe we could arrange a meeting with the chair and Senator DeSaulnier. I note that probably what he wants to do is make sure that we have regional government, but it not all be in one building.
Well, I'll hopefully give up on it. Anyway, we don't want to talk about that subject. So, Jim,
Tom,
your point is well taken. I'll happy to address it to him if I see him. I know other chairs are trying to meet with him. And once this bill comes out, I think it would be important for us to sit down and figure out how we want to deal with it.
And Tom, I just really think it's important that we ask the question, what are we doing wrong? What is it that you feel is not getting accomplished or getting addressed? And I think at some point that question needs to be asked.
Okay.
And
I'll ask it. So,
thanks.
So I wanted to mention, Paul, did you want to mention?
I was going to say, because you're moving on next.
Yeah.
I thank you all for inviting me. I apologize. I teach at Stanford, and I have to teach a class in about an hour and a half, so I'm going to sneak away. But if anyone ever wants to talk about this offline, I'd be very, very happy to. And just think of the city-state as an organizing principle for thinking about how these issues are. So, again, thank you for inviting me.
We're welcome. Thank you for coming. And I want to point out we have in the audience some very esteemed people. Mark, Zach Wasserman is the new chair of BCDC is here. Zach, everybody knows Zach. I think a lot of people know. And also Mark Luce is here, who's a new ABAG chair. And Julie Pierce is here, also the vice chair. So welcome, you guys. You could. So we're going to now go to which is the meat of the meeting, which is the review of the purpose and process. And I think Travis can lead this to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you directed at your last meeting, we've analyzed how the JPC can improve its capabilities for achieving your objectives. Three important sources of information served as the foundation for our analysis. First, the agreement MTC and ABAG reached in 2003 when they established the Joint Policy Committee. Second, state legislation that was enacted in 2004 and 2008 that increased the membership of the JPC and it expanded its responsibilities. And third, the policy decisions you've made over the past several years. We built on this foundation by meeting with the chairs and the directors of the four JPC agencies. Other members of the JPC and some of the stakeholders have been working with you. Our first conclusion, which can be found on pages 3 and 4 of our report, is that there is broad agreement and legislative support that the primary role of the JPC is to coordinate the work of its four member agencies. The overarching goals of this coordination are to reduce overlapping and duplicative work and avoid actions that work at cross purposes. As important as this coordination role is, there is also broad agreement that the JPC hasn't been completely effective at fulfilling this role. While it's important that any attempt to improve the JPC's effectiveness, address past shortcomings, it's even more important to acknowledge that coordination will always be an ongoing process and never a finished product. As you engage in this process of coordination, it's worth remembering that the JPC has no authority to either compel or prohibit any action by its member agencies. But before agreeing with those who have suggested that this is a fatal flaw that should be addressed by the legislature, we believe it's better to take full advantage of the commitment of the executives, leadership, and staffs of the four agencies to make the JPC work better. Now, to take full advantage of this commitment, on page 4 of our report, we've outlined a 6-step process which we believe will markedly improve the JPC's coordination capacity. We recommend that after making any needed refinements, you endorse this process. We will then test the effectiveness of this process by exploring the best ways we can assist local governments so their planning will both protect public health by preventing people living near highways from being exposed to high levels of emissions and concentrate communities near transportation corridors. In other words, we'll explore ways we can achieve these two important public policy goals in a complementary fashion. Our second conclusion, which is stated on page 4 of our report, is that the other important responsibility of the JPC is to provide regional leadership. Admittedly, some have suggested that the JPC should limit itself to coordinating the activities of its four member agencies. But you recognize that the mandates of the four agencies do not encompass all the issues confronting the Bay region, and that government alone does not possess all the tools that can be used to deal with these challenges. Therefore, last year, you unanimously decided that the JPC should work in partnership with other interests on 3 projects described on page 2 of our report. No one has suggested that the JPC rescind that decision or that you end your efforts in facilitating these projects. However, we believe it would be helpful to have a more systematic approach for deciding which additional issues you want to play a leadership role in addressing from this point forward. In other words, you should decide how to go about deciding. Having criteria and a process for vetting issues is particularly important at this time because you have a specific request from BCDC for the JPC to facilitate the formulation of a regional sea level rise adaptation strategy. You discussed whether the JPC should take on this role last November, and you decided to refer it to your member agencies. And while all four agencies agree that sea level rise is an important issue, BCDC's request hasn't been explicitly endorsed by the other three agencies. Now, to deal with this situation, we recommend that after making any needed refinements, you endorse the four-step process for identifying critical regional issues that's outlined on page 5 of our report. We'll then develop criteria for your consideration at your next meeting. We can then apply the criteria you adopt to the sea level rise issue, so you can decide whether this is the sort of regional issue where the JPC should play a leadership role. Finally, we looked at the way the JPC is organized and the manner in which you carry out your activities to determine whether changes could make you more effective. On pages 5 and 6 of our report, we've described three basic options for improving the operations of the JPC. The first is to meet more often and have longer meetings. The second is to establish an executive committee to handle the key responsibilities of the JPC. And the third is to restructure the JPC so its membership is made up of the leadership of each of the four agencies. We recommend that you consider each of these options and provide us direction for implementing the option you decide which will work best. Bruce and I are available if you have any questions about this. Thank you.
Mark? So why don't we start at the beginning? Why don't we start with the first recommendation, if that's all right?
Well, I'll give you time, all three of them. I'll jam through them, all three. On the first set of recommendations, which I guess are on page 4, I'm fine with that. And on page 5, that next 4 on the four-step process. So let me just say this as an overall thing, and I've said this before, and I'll keep saying it again since Paul probably might even agree with this. As I've come to realize, we wouldn't need a joint policy committee if we had one agency rather than four. But that's for another that's for another topic. But that's why we're here, because we have four agencies. And so as long as we have four agencies or some number above one, we will need some coordination. So I would agree with those two. Under the management part, I do think that number two, where some type of an executive subcommittee. Which actually, I think we did it at the ABAG retreat. We actually basically endorsed that idea, so I'm fine with that. On the third thing, though, the third recommendation back there, and as far as more, I know Mark wants to meet every month, and maybe may or may not be necessary. One thing I said, the other thing I've said here, though, Tom, is that I do think that instead of shrinking this, is that because, I know you've had some discussions with this also, I do think we need other people around the table besides just elected officials. If we're going to be trying to integrate all these things left and right, we need people out of the business community actually here, not just bring them in for a discussion when needed. They need to be here on an ongoing basis. So I think that there's some further restructuring of who sits around the table rather than just being a pod of elected officials, of others. I mean, mostly a pod, I'll put it that way. So I do think that the business community needs to be involved, because we've been pounding on jobs all day. The first half of the report was all about jobs. We need to back it up with actually having some jobs being represented around here.
Okay, I have Osh, and then I have Jane, and then Scott.
Thank you. I really appreciate the work that's been done on this. I've made comments in the past about kind of the need for some more structure, and I think that this will certainly help, as well as a need for more focus as to the function of JPC. And I do think that on the third set of recommendations before we get to the point of deciding, oh, well, there need to be longer meetings, we need to meet more. I think that the earlier steps need to be in place prior to that as far as some of the structural steps and the criteria for setting the projects, initiatives, and let's see how effective we can be in going back to the four member agencies and having constructive feedback returned back. And just, let's see how that process, at least in my opinion, see how that process plays out before we decide to give either more, certainly before we decide at any point to give more authority, but at the very least before we decide to, for all of us, to invest more time and energy, let's hear the feedback from the member agencies as to how the newer processes and the more structured process works out. And I don't necessarily disagree that we could probably stand to have a smaller size JPC, but I think that's really going to require a very structured form of communication with the four member agencies, because all of us serve at the pleasure of our member agencies. And so, I think that it's really important that we have a system set up where if there are particular projects to be discussed, and if it's coming, from BCDC, as the example was given, that there be kind of timelines in place, and that that the same information is going to the other three member agencies and comes back to JPC, so that there's a clear understanding that those of us that are here as part of JPC are truly reflecting kind of the input from the entire boards that we represent. But I do think that the structure will help us actually get some constructive feedback back to the member agencies on projects that are going forward. I do think there's a value on all four of the member agencies deal with very broad projects that or issues that certainly have impacts on the different issue areas that the four boards deal with. So I think it is important. I know being on the Air District on ABAG, there's certainly a value in some of the initiatives that we go forward with to get the feedback from the other member agencies. And so as far as, I don't, the meetings, the opportunity for us to bring individuals from whether it be the business community or from, academia, we have that opportunity here at all times, but the door is always open. And I think that we should certainly take advantage of that. As far as board membership, I think that's a different that's a little different. I think that, for the most part, we're elected officials, and but I do think that there's definitely opportunities to explore that with maybe limiting the number that we – reducing the number we currently have and seeing other opportunities to work with folks outside of this room.
Okay. What I'd like to do is – don't hear from Jane and Scott, and then I'd like to go back to whether we want to adopt the first recommendation and the second recommendation. The third seems to be where the discussion is headed. So I'd like to at least have a motion at some point on that. Jane, would you –
Yes, I'm going to talk about the third also. So I have no trouble with more frequent meetings or establishing an executive committee, but I do have concern about the makeup of the 12 members. And I think what has been really good at this committee is the diversity and the debate. And I think we bring back to our the organizations we represent and to our cities that debate. If you just have the leadership of the four of the organizations, you're not going to have that kind of debate. You're going to have them representing sort of the narrow position that I think some of these organizations take. I also am concerned that I don't quite think the at-large, there's a mention here that it make sure they represent the nine Bay Area counties with the at-large, but I think you need to take a look at the big cities, because if you do not have big cities represented in this committee, you're going to have the big cities walk. Because they're not, I think that the way three looks to me, the membership, it's going to end up being small cities controlling it. Because that tends to be, and you're not going to have the big cities, and then the big cities will decide to not participate in this, and you do need the big cities in there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still trying to formulate what it is I want to say, but I'm going to take a shot at it. First of all, I want to say this. I've almost been a little inspired by today's meeting, because I almost feel like maybe something is going to happen. But actually, I view the JPC as kind of a failure of government. And what I mean by that is, we all came about as kind of the discussion of a merger, with ABAG and MTC, and this became kind of the outgrowth of it, and then the Air District wanted to be a member, and then BCDC wanted to be a member, and hence the JPC was formed. As I sit here, as I sit here at a meeting earlier this week, which was called the RPC, I start trying to figure out what is the difference here, and why isn't the RPC that has transportation representatives and has school districts on it and everything else, why isn't the RPC doing this, the work we're doing here? I guess what I'm saying is, why do we need both? We either need the JPC or we either need the RPC. But I certainly don't believe, and I alluded to this earlier, this is probably the seventh time I've been handed this document. Now, maybe some of you would say, well, you sit on too many committees, okay? But first of all, you know, it gets a little monotonous to continue at all these meetings to have this handed to you and say comment on it, when in fact you commented on it the first three times and you're feeling like you're taking up air. So I guess what I would say to you is I think what we should figure out is, how does the RPC and the JPC work together? Do we merge them? Do we take the current structure that the RPC has and make it better? Or whatever. But I don't think we need two. When you talk about holding more frequent meetings and having them longer, I think that's the problem with government. If you said that in business, they would laugh at you. And the reason they would laugh at you is because you should not perceive how long a meeting should be or how often you should do it. You should do it when it's needed, and you should take the time necessary to do the work of the day. So to codify that, I think, is a little ridiculous. Getting back to the chairs, I really believe, and as I said earlier when I first started, that this started as the outgrowth of a merger. I have no problem with the chairs of ABAG, MTC, BCDC, and who did I miss? And the Air District having the chairs meet to talk about how we better coordinate. And in fact, I think that was a huge failure while the Air District was going through CEQA guidelines. There was not that discussion. So I have no problem with that group meeting, because I think really that was the spirit of the merger. That was the spirit of better coordination, and I think that should happen. And then when you start talking about reducing the numbers of the amount of members that serve, and, well, you know, I remember when I was chair, I think, of the MTC at the time. Maybe it was the Air District. I don't know. One of them. And we were getting ready to set this up, and the executive director, whoever it was, said, you know, you need to appoint somebody from San Mateo. Well, why do I need to appoint somebody from San Mateo? Nothing against San Mateo, Madam Chair. But because nobody else had, and there was an imbalance. And we wanted to make sure that we had representation from the nine counties, including the cities and everything else. So when you start talking about smaller, I start talking about more inclusive, I start talking about making sure that you reach all of the areas of the county. I mean, I understand Jane Bruner's discussion about the three major cities. That is the purpose of the bill right now that MTC is running, to get those three mayors at the table, and hopefully those mayors show up to the meetings. But, you know, when you do that, and when you're trying to make sure that you include the three cities, there's cities that are almost as big. For example, the city of Fremont being the second largest city in Alameda County. I mean, they should be represented. So I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think you should predetermine the meeting. I think we should figure out how JPC and RPC can work together and eliminate one of them. I don't care which one, but eliminate one of them. Because it's kind of what we were talking about a few items ago. We were talking about merging fire districts, or Jim Sperry mentioned transportation districts, transit agencies. Gosh, if we can't even merge ourselves, how can we go to other people and say do it? So those are just my thoughts right now, Mr. Chair. I personally find this working group, I find the group that's here workable. The amount of people that are here, you know, I was told by my staff, you better be here, you better be on time, because, you know, they're having a problem with quorum. So, you know, I think that as it is, it sits. This is fine. But I also think that from a functional standpoint, it is important that the two, the chair and the vice chair from each agency meet to talk about how we better coordinate the work we're doing.
Okay, thank you. So, Mark, you want to join this conversation with us?
Thank you very much. I really endorse your approach. As my understanding of the JPC, again, our primary role is to bring back the discussion of where our overlapping issues are back to our agency so that we can deal with them. And as chair and vice chair of each of those agencies, we're the people who are appointed essentially to do that. And so I think that regardless of how big it is, that at least those members are present, and that, again, the primary role of the JPC should be to resolve those conflicts and decide which agency should be looking at what issue. So basically, I agree with everything that's proposed here. What I've heard that I haven't discussed with anybody before is that there is a value to an advisory body, and it seems like there's maybe a conflict of whether this is an advisory body or a decision-making body, and I think we're saying it's more of a decision-making body to take things back and continue policy in the right direction, the functional, pragmatic thing we talked about earlier. But there may be a role for an advisory body to take on the question of what else should we be doing, but that would be advisory to the JBC to perhaps advise things that aren't coming from each of the different agencies, perhaps with the criteria that you guys are going to be talking about in terms of what should the JBC looking at, and then that advisory body would take on that responsibility so that the chair and vice chair, which also have other responsibilities, aren't responsible for looking at what else they should be doing. And just a suggestion.
Thank you very much. So I'd like to bring it back to
Just a quick comment. I think most of the comments have been very good. I don't know that I'd want to make the group much bigger than this, and I think as you make it smaller, then you're exclusive instead of inclusive. The one thing that Mr. Green mentioned was about the business community, and I think whether or not they need to be on this committee, I'm not sure if that's the case, but if you look at the different things we're looking at in the near future, if we've agreed on the first two parts, is green jobs, economic strategy, and Bay Area climate and all that, which affects the businesses, et cetera. I do think it's important that if we're going to have different sessions on these different issues, that we do get people from the different communities that are affected by this, and the majority of it would definitely be our business communities, to see how they do tie in. Because the one thing we all talked about is we could create all that we want, and if what we do affects the economy to a real negative degree, then I think we're looking at it backwards. So I think, and Tom, I know you and I talked about, there's a lot of businesses we'd like to bring to the table at the appropriate time to have a healthy discussion so that as we try to formulate, where we're going with this, that we hear from those that are affected and those that we could be affecting. So, whether they actually are members, I think they need to be at the table.
Okay. And I would like to go back to items one and two.
I'll be very quick. I think Scott made a good point about the RPC. I mean, years ago, I participated in the RPC, and it struck me then, maybe it's changed since then, but it was also a group kind of looking for its purpose without a whole lot of authority. So some definition there about how they fit together would be helpful. On the business topic, though, that Mark raised, when we started early last year, about a year ago, and the chairs and executive directors started to meet together periodically, an idea was raised then about having essentially a business advisory committee to the JPC. Not necessarily members of the JPC, that's a different proposition, but an advisory group that would have some defined structural relationship to the JPC. And so for the economic study we're doing, when I mentioned the advisory committee, probably half of that are going to be the significant business and economic development organizations in the region. And I've kind of been viewing that as a possible halfway house into a business advisory committee, because they will be involved with the JPC through the process, they'll be teed up, and probably all the right people will be there. So my suggestion would be that we think about the idea of some kind of a structured standing relationship for the business and economic development through a designated advisory committee.
Okay. Can I do this? Let's just have a motion on. I know Mark wants to. Wait, Mark, just for a second.
No, I'm just going to make your motions.
Good. One and two.
All right, I'll make under the first two set of staff recommendations. I'll make a motion to support both of those. Okay, let's see. We're back on page. This is page four of the. Okay, well, I'm looking at the top right-hand corner, page 4, it has items 1 through 6. The JPC consultants, that's the first phrase of the first item, and the last one, number 6, ends outside issue discussion meetings. That entire encapsulation, I would move that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are you also moving the...
And I'm also, since we're on that, then on page 5, again, this is by the upper right-hand corner, this is on most likely to identify critical issues and projects, starting with number 1, the JPC consultants, and ending on number 4, a work plan for a selected project, everything encapsulated in there.
Okay. So second? Right. Sure. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really wish, getting back to my original point about the RPC, that there should be some direction in this that basically says that we're instructing the consultants and the appropriate executive directors to look at the nexus between the RPC and the JPC and see if there's a possible merger there. I think that's good government.
Well, I think, Scott, that would be, I think we can work that into the JPC management part.
Management. That's all right, Scott. We can bring it up later. Okay, is there any objection to us all being voted aye on those items number 1 and 2, as explained? Okay, then that passes unanimously. Okay, so at least we now have a structure. We have a way to make decisions, and we should be
able to. Now, let me keep going.
Now you're going to go to item number 3.
Yeah, okay. Now, on item 3, an item on, I guess it's on page 5 here at the bottom, it says hold a more frequent. I think that's to be determined, not
right, I agree.
Prescriptive.
Right.
On item 2, I do think that that's worthy to do that. The executive subcommittee, again, that's just we're not taking Oakland away or doing a shrinkage. Just I do think the establishment of an executive subcommittee is worthy.
With the chairs and the vice chairs?
Yeah, that's correct, as it's written. So I would move that also under 2. And I think that under 3, again, you know, from what Sean was talking and Adrian, and at least myself, I think there's 3 of us around here who do think that, and I don't know, with the motion, I don't think there's a motion to be made right now, but I do think there's some, it'd be nice to have something that the staff could put together at a future meeting rather soon as to whether it's a standing subcommittee, whatever relationship they are on an as-needed basis, if they're here as on an ad hoc basis, some kind of a ex officio, I should say. We need to get the critical players here on the business side again, because the economics is such a critical. I mean, for those of us who saw the polling within the last week, that was the number one thing around the Bay Area that was on everybody's mind. It wasn't education, it wasn't health, it wasn't sports teams, it was jobs and the economy. Period. Over and out. So we need to acknowledge that here, too.
Mr. Chair, if I could make a suggestion, can I second the motion to 1 and 2? And as I understood it, Mark's saying don't really codify 1. It happens as it happens. And then the support of 2. I'd like to second those 2 and move those and get those
okay. Back.
And then I would like to discuss item 3 real quick.
Okay. So let's do this. Actually, item 1, we don't need to take any action. So you move, moves item 2, and you seconded item 2.
That's fine.
Okay. So is there an objection to that?
Just noting that item 1 has been stricken.
Is there an objection to that? Okay. Seeing none, then that also passed unanimously. Now we'll go to the third recommendation, which is to reduce the size. I don't think there's support for that.
I don't support that, but I certainly support the inclusion of business in this equation, and I just go back to what I talked about earlier, and that is RPC. Maybe what we should do is ask staff and the executive directors to go back to see how we could maybe dovetail RPC and JPC together, getting the advantages that they have, such as the academia, business, transportation, everybody else they have sitting around the table, to see if there is a better idea out there, and ask staff to bring that back to our next meeting.
So I think that's a good recommendation. So let me see if I understand it. I think what we're suggesting then is the staff to look at the question of possible working closer together with the RPGC.
Talking merging.
And maybe possibly merging.
Right.
And then also to engage how they would suggest we might engage with the business community on a more regular basis.
Right, because they have members of the business community.
So we could, but I mean that's 2, with both the RPC and the business.
Let me just brief, Tom, 30 seconds. The RPC is the Regional Planning Committee out of ABAG. It has a number of county supervisors, mayors, city council members, but also, Scott was pointing out, the building, it used to be called the Building Industry Association, Urban Habitat, Green Belt Alliance, Sierra Club, nonprofit housing organizations, a various array of players around the table, education, so there's the California Teachers Association as a representative. And I'm not saying that all these are the ideal ones, but it, again, it was, as Scott mentioned, it's a much wider, diverse panel than what we have sitting here. I mean, just to be, I mean, just, it's sure. candid about it.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. I think it would be worth it to bring it back with some ideas about how we might look at it and then at the same time examine the question of how we might engage the business community. So is that your motion? To have him?
I always am nervous, Mr. Chair, when you interpret my motions.
I didn't know. That's why I was asking
you. I think you captured the spirit as long as staff is clear.
From the staff's perspective, just so I understand it, you're endorsing number two, which is establishing this executive subcommittee. And the first task of this executive subcommittee is to work with the staff to analyze the relative roles of the JPC and the regional.
No, that's not my motion.
Okay.
My motion is to send you and the executive directors back to come back with what you know they would suggest as the possible dovetailing of RPC and JPC to get a more inclusive body that represents.
Okay.
It could be that we continue the way we are. I mean, not, so, yeah, that's right. Okay. Okay. Well, that's the motion's before us. I don't.
Could I just ask a question on that? Because I hear where you're going, but that's fine to look at those two together. I'd also like to ask if as you work together, if you have any other options or solutions where perhaps it isn't that we try to merge the two, but as it relates to subject matter, as we move forward on different things, there may be different groups who might want to join us rather than trying to merge. I guess what I worry about, sometimes these groups get so unwieldy that they don't work well. But if you need the education component to talk about a subject matter, bring them in. If you need the business community or if you need one or two of them on a subject matter, I just see my problem is the bigger they get, the more unwieldy, and I think it gets even worse. I don't think you end up.
And it also, we're established by state law, too. David?
Yeah, I have no problem supporting the motion in terms of looking at it. I think you will uncover some things that aren't so overlapping or some things that people here aren't really that interested in getting involved in. For example, I mean, as a chair of the RPC, you know, there's heavy discussions in there about the RENA process. You know, I'm not sure this group wants to merge into that discussion any further than we already do. But worth looking at it. And I'm just going to identify, you know, maybe the elephant's not quite in the room completely, but, you know, we're moving very quickly under construction to a physical consolidation of a whole bunch of the people that are involved in all these discussions, particularly from a staff standpoint. And we don't know the outcome of ABAG's role in that, but we do for the other three agencies. And, you know, that, so when you guys go off and have this discussion, I would expect, you know, that to be not the elephant in the room, but part of the discussion. I'd like to know, you know, do people really start lining up elected? I'm on BCDC now, sort of by default, because my district touches the Bay, as we found out. But it's a wonderful organization from what I've seen. Do I really, you know, start taking trips to San Francisco and then have a BCDC meeting with a whole bunch of people from the private sector and public sector and then, you know, an RPC, JPC meeting with a whole bunch of people from the private sector and the public sector and then an MTC meeting where we have the ABAG admin committee there because, you know, everyone just decided we need to continue those meetings so we have important people present. I mean, all I'm saying is physical proximity and all that's going to need to be taken into account, at least to satisfy me at some point.
Mr. Chair?
I'd like to show up at one place and have one meeting whenever possible, and that goes back to your comment. I do come from a private sector background, and it's always, I've found it very interesting, as long as I've been in the public sector, that if you have 2 hours for a meeting, rarely does it end before 1 hour and 59 minutes is up in the public sector. In a private sector, oftentimes a two-hour time slot will end in 15 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes if we can get everything settled. So I'd like to see more efficiencies discussed, including taking into account what physical proximities may may change in terms of that whole process. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. So I'd like to ask Ezra if he'd like to make a comment. I mean, I'm not familiar with this group. It seems like it's going to be such a huge problem trying to merge these two groups. I mean, for one thing, we're established by law.
Mr. Chair, I know you're asking to talk to Ezra, but can I just clarify before we get too crazy here, because I just want to clarify what it is that I'm thinking in my mind.
Good, okay.
And all that. I'm not saying that everybody at RPC now comes and we just make this table bigger and now they're sitting here. What I'm saying is there is a lot of overlap between the RPC and the JPC, and I would like staff, when they come back, to tell us how they could see the structure of that, meaning what are we missing here? Are we missing academia? Are we missing business? And then put those people on the board, not make the board huge, a little bigger, and then do the work of both. And that's really what I'm saying. And with all due respect, we do talk about RENA because, you know, this is – in front of us today. So, I mean, ultimately, this is about regional housing needs and job needs and everything else. So I think the conversation is germane, and I just like staff to take a good look at it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But, you know, we go to all these agencies, and we go to transit agencies, and we're going through this at MTC right now and saying, you need to consolidate, but yet we're starting a group here that's pretty much doing the same thing.
Point. Yeah, sir, do you want to make Ezra?
I just wanted to add a couple of sentences. Regional Planning Committee advises staff on how we do our planning. So they look under the hood for all of our methodology and from a variety of viewpoints, give us advice about what work we produce, similar to the Policy Advisory Committee for MTC. This body is much more policy-making. RPC is not a policy-making committee.
Okay. Kravitz, did you want to make one?
Well, interesting discussion. I always come back to trying to get clarity for staff so that we understand exactly what you expect of us. And as I understand it, you want us to look at the relative roles of the JPC, the Regional Planning Committee, report back to you as to where they overlap, how they're different, how they're the same, so you can explore whether merger is appropriate or not. Secondarily, looking at how the business community can better be engaged in the JPC's work. I will tell you that since the process we have used to bring this recommendation to you has gone back to the executive directors and the leadership of the four agencies, even if you don't tell us to do that, that has worked so well that we will do it again, because I don't want to bring something forward to you and then have you say, well, that's fine, but what do the member agencies think of it? Sure. So we will run it through them.
Carl Anthony wants to speak on this issue, I believe. Do you have a card in?
Do you have a second card, too?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the JPC. My name is Carl Anthony, and I'm with an organization called the Breakthrough Communities, and we're also part of the Six Big Wins Coalition has been organizing in the Bay Area to address the opportunities and the challenges of bringing social equity to the forefront in the sustainable community strategies. And I would like to report that I believe that we've made some progress in that. I think our members of our coalition have met with a lot of the members of this group and the ABAG leadership as well as the MTC leadership, and we have at least had the opportunity of presenting some ideas about how we could move forward with a much more equitable approach to the sustainable community strategies. I am here today to actually lift up two issues that I think we have not adequately addressed, even though we've made some good progress. The first, I think, was Mayor Green raised, and I think one or two other people raised. I think there's a very strong sentiment among many people, including the people of color and many of the groups that are suffering from the current economic situation, that we need to find some way to actually produce or create more economic leadership in the region. And so I think there's a function there that needs to be, in a sense, made more public. I know that we have the Bay Area Council and we have others that have been working on these issues, but as we got into questions about how do we get jobs located in places that are more convenient or more related to the public transportation, we ran up against the reality that there's no public body that actually can make decisions about that. So that's one point that I wanted to raise. The second point that I wanted to raise is that although the climate change issue has been very visible in the public conversation, there's also been another really important shift that I think needs to be addressed much more systematically, and that is the great demographic shift that's happening in the Bay Area in terms of communities of color and in terms of age. We have a situation in which many of the people who have been in leadership positions in the Bay Area have been older generation of people who are predominantly white, and we have a younger generation of people of color. And even though we've made some progress in bringing about a better conversation in terms of public participation, I think we're really very far away from actually being able to say that we have a process that is genuinely representative of the broad cross-section of the public. And so I think we should really be looking much more systematically at the implications of the demographic shift. And this is not only true in the Bay Area, it's also across the country. Some of you are aware of the fact by 2042, the majority of the population in the country will be people of color.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. So we have a motion. I'd like to have the staff restate the motion so we get the clarity, and then we'd... You want to try to restate the motion? No, that's okay. That's all right. You got it.
As I understand it, the motion is to support option number 2 of establishing an
executive. We already approved that.
Okay.
Item number 3.
Item number 3 is that we should evaluate the role of the Regional Planning Committee relative to the role of the Joint Policy Committee and report to you as to where there are opportunities to avoid duplication and explore even merger of the two, and to explore mechanisms for more actively engaging the business community in the role and the work of the JPC.
Okay, I think that gets what the essence of the motion is. So is there any objection?
Mr. Churches, can I ask something real quick?
Sure.
Does that kind of kick the can on the 12-member issue until we...
No, we decided...
I think we've rejected that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to support the motion. I just want to briefly state why. I think we're just drifting further away from the purpose of this committee. We were bringing representatives of each of these regional agencies together to talk about overlapping issues, and we're just drifting further away from what I think is our core mission, and so I'm not going to support the motion. I from my perspective, and I serve on the RPC, I don't even care what they go do, and so I don't think it should be part of our discussion here. I mean, I think we've got many challenges that we should be discussing here, and you know, the RPC can do, and I agree kind of with Dave's comments that they discuss a lot of issues that really aren't appropriately discussed at this level.
Your motion number 1 was to support a more systematic process for dealing with the coordination. You've also rejected making this committee smaller, so you would continue to do what it is that you see as the primary role of the JPC. This is evaluating whether there are opportunities to more actively engage the business community and avoid some duplication.
I don't see this as being expansion either, Jim. I see it as an opportunity to find out what they're doing and how. Okay, it's fine.
I'm a no vote.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. So is there anyone else wishes to be voted no? Yeah. Okay, so it passes 2 no votes. Okay. Thank you very much. Now, we have an opportunity on the agenda for board comments. We're a little after 12, which I apologize for, but we had an interesting meeting. Anybody have any comments? Okay. Carl, you had a card in. I assume you wanted to talk. We got the chance. You had 2 cards in, actually. But you had your chance to speak. Are you satisfied with that? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, so we're adjourned, and we'll be meeting. We're going to try to find a special time for a special meeting. Thank you very much.